The Evening Lecture, A.T. Jones. The subject is the making of the papacy, the union of church and state as it was formed in the beginning, and the working of affairs that brought it about. In Constantine's time there were 6 emperors. Before that there were 4, and before that only 1 was recognized. There were really 2, with the others as assistants. Finally, by the death and abdication, it was reduced to 2, Constantine and Maximin. From the beginning of the mutual reign of these 6 men, each strove to become supreme, and each with a powerful army, warring with and killing each other, so that finally Constantine killed the last and reigned alone. But the military power was so equally divided that it became policy to gather all outside power possible. Now Constantine saw the Christian Church just emerging from the persecution of Diocletian, which was not particularly against any denomination, for there were some 90 different forms of Christianity. This persecution, which was the last pagan effort, had united these denominations in self-defense against the common enemy. At this time there was a grasping for power among the bishops of the churches, and the emperor knew it. Maximin, the emperor with Constantine, made them an offer, but the bishops feared him. But Constantine, being such a consummate hypocrite, he won them. In 311 AD, a party of these bishops visited Constantine, and the bargain of support was concluded. They, promising him the united support of the church in return for place and power. When afterwards he found how divided the church was, he was extremely disappointed, and practically, as soon as religion became an imperial attribute, it became the aim of every bishop to curry favor and seek for power from the emperor, so that he never knew again a peaceful day, exclaiming once, "Oh, give me back my quiet days and peaceful nights." Now that being the reason of his conversion from paganism to Christianity, for all the conversion he ever had was a political one, we want to see what the idea of the bishops was in seeking this union. In the church had arisen a false theory of a theocracy, which was the prevailing one in the time of Constantine, and they were determined to turn the Roman Empire into a kingdom of God, and so they made themselves dependent on the emperor to gain the power of the secular arm of the government. Now there was originally a true theocracy upon the earth when God led the children of Israel out of Egypt. We all know how the Israelites went down to the Red Sea. Pharaoh tried to follow and was drowned and sunk to the bottom of the sea. Then the Israelites sang the song of Moses, and afterwards in the wilderness, Moses erected a temple, and in it communed with God. This form of theocracy continued until the days of Samuel, when the people asked for a king like another nation, and the Lord chose Saul, and afterwards David. And when Solomon reigned in his place, the record is he sat on the throne of the Lord as his father before him, the line being established in David's house by direct promise of God that David's throne would last forever. Zedekiah was the last of the line on earth, being removed by the Lord because of wickedness, and was to remain vacant until he came whose right it was. The next place the throne is mentioned is in Luke when Christ is born, when he is promised the throne of his father David. But he was not a king on the earth. "My kingdom is not of this world," although born to be a king. So until the next world there can never be a theocracy again. When he died the people were scattered, and the end of the theocracy had come. Now when these bishops attempted to set up a theocracy, they turned away from the truth and prevented the purpose of God. Daniel chapter 7 tells that God will not be given his throne until the judgment. So then, any kingdom or form of government of God on earth until Christ comes is treason against God. Now mark what those bishops did in Rome. The speaker read from Eusebius' Life of Constantine to show how those bishops tried to exalt Constantine into a royal selection of gods, a second Moses, to lead the church out of the strange land into the land of promise. They claimed that when Maximin fell off the bridge and sank as a stone was a second drowning of Pharaoh, and that Constantine was a second Moses to deliver the people and church from oppression. Constantine himself followed out this idea to such an extent that he had a tabernacle erected, and in it he would go before battle, and claiming then to have a vision from God, he would rush out and give orders of the battle by divine inspiration. So then, by claiming Constantine to be called by divine appointment, they take the first step in the forming of the theocracy. The next step was to put in a Sabbath to imitate the steps in the true theocracy. This was a natural result, because Constantine wrote them, "Let us have nothing in common with the Jews." Under Diocletian, many churches had been destroyed. Constantine ordered them to be rebuilt and the property restored to them. At that time, there was a sect of Donatists who petitioned the emperor to restore their churches. But Constantine said only the Catholic churches were to be rebuilt. This brought on a series of councils to decide between the Donatists, Arians, and Trinitarians, to decide which was Catholic. And so fierce were the disputes, and so disgraceful, that the theaters parodied the quarrels for the amusement of the populace. Constantine finally placed in the Declaration of Principles the word homoousion, and that decided the fate of all Rome and the Catholic world ever since, becoming the Catholic creed forever after, so that Constantine prepared the doctrine for this church. After the death of Constantine, various emperors added additional matter to the creed according to the side of faith they held, causing council after council to obtain unity of belief among the churches, the emperors keeping the bishops prisoners when the council would be held until they agreed to sign the creed prepared for them. At the Council of Nicaea, Eusebius declared that Constantine, when he entered, appeared as a god before them, and says, "One might easily believe that one beheld the type of Christ's kingdom," and in another place declares that Constantine's palace was the New Jerusalem, described in Revelation by John. Now Eusebius is declared to be one of the best of the bishops. Now if he could see the kingdom of Christ as coming Constantine and his palace, what might the others discover? Constantine's mother sent two of the nails of the cross, claimed to be found, to her son, to put one of them in his helmet to protect him, and the other was made into a bit for his horse. And then the bishops claimed this to be a fulfillment of Zacharias chapter 14, verse 26, and that the kingdom of Christ had come. This was the work and political scheming between the church and Constantine. Now about his conversion, he never was converted unless on his deathbed. The only conversion was a political one. In 312, he told Eusebius he saw the vision of the cross in the air, of which we have only his own words. In 314, he made a decree that the church donations, and the record is that he could not have given more if he had given to Romans provinces. In about 318, he made the decision of the bishops as fixed as though Christ had done so, provided the person went to them voluntarily. In March 321, he made the decree to examine the entrails of an animal to decide the cause of public calamities. In 323, he murdered his wife's father. In 326, he murdered his own son, wife, and his nephew, and many relatives. In 328, he laid the foundations of Constantinople, according to the ritual of paganism. In 330, it was dedicated to the Virgin Mary. And when finished, the statues of pagan deities were all placed in the city. The statue of Apollo was erected in the most conspicuous place. Apollo was the god of the sun worshipper, and was Constantine's favorite god. If then anyone can prove he was a Christian, it is more than I can do. Constantine caused 12 pillars to be erected, and with a vacant space in the center, in honor of the apostles, and also 12 coffins, separated as the pillars, for the same purpose, and after his death a new pillar was added and a new coffin for himself, and he shared the worship and honor given to the departed apostles. Can anyone wonder that Paul calls all this the mystery of iniquity?